Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast, episode 64. Clock, 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 I'm a chicken. Clock. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. Like everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. Like everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 64, being recorded on November the 30th, 2016, brought to you by the Happy Hour Network and RayRay.net. My name is Ray Moraldi, also known as Ray Ray. And if you've never heard this podcast, it's mostly NBA talk because, after all, I am an NBA online writer. But also, I talk about other sports, video games, anime, music, TV shows, whatever the heck I want, because it's all about the fundamentals of life, and that's why this podcast is called Ray Ray is Fundamental. In this episode, we're going to talk about the Nintendo 64, because it is, after all, episode 64, with gamer Sharif Jackson. And before that, we're going to talk Girl Meets World, the TV show, the sequel to Boy Meets World, in Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad. But before we do all of that, I just want to remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also dial the show on Stitcher and RayRay.net. Follow the podcast Twitter at RayRayIsFun. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass. So, without further ado, let's get on with this. It's Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad. Hey!
It's Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad.
It's Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad. It's been a long while. Joanne, how are you?
Peaches.
So, we've been wanting to talk about this for months now, actually.
Yes, maybe we have.
Maybe years. I don't know, because I remember telling Joanne that, hey, Girl Meets World is actually pretty good.
And you did.
And we always balk at sequels to TV shows, because obviously Boy Meets World is like everyone's favorite 90s teen.
That's a classic.
Teen sitcom or whatever. Like, everyone has fond memories of it. And so far, the responses are mostly pretty good. Like, I know some don't like it because they didn't think it's that good, but I'm like, well, Boy Meets World didn't start out that well either. You know? but anyway, yeah, but Girl Meets World is fantastic. Like, and the best thing about it is that, like, obviously the old creators, like, you know, did this, and all of the mostly the characters from Boy Meets World come back for at least a
cameo. Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic, and there's so many little subtle callbacks that might even just go right past you if you weren't really too into the original show, but, you know.
Yeah.
Those of us who are, you know, pretty good fans of that show.
I watched it a while back, but I never, like, fully watched the entire series, so I marathoned it, and then I decided, oh, Girl Meets World looks pretty good, I should try watching that, and, like, it's not about, you know, going after guys or that sort of thing or whatever, it's more about friendship, which is what I appreciate, and,
yeah,
you know, it's a powerful thing between two girls, Riley and Maya. So, what do you think about that dichotomy right there?
That's just one of my favorite aspects of the show, that the priority is the friendship. I texted you a few times. I was getting nervous here and there when they were trying to push the love triangle. I didn't want to see the best friend break up over a boy. And that's absolutely, you know, not what they did at all. They went in a completely different direction and always emphasized the friendship first, and that's just something nice to see.
Yeah, and it's weird also because they're still really young girls. Like, they're 15 or 16 on the show right now. So it's kind of weird to, like, push, like, a love story, like, you know, at that age already. You know what I mean? So
it's good. And one of the other things that I really like about the show is that they're allowed to act like kids. You know?
Yeah.
Ninth graders pretending to be adults. So, still get, yeah, which is silly fun.
Yeah, because you remember in past shows like 90210 and Dawson's Creek, it's like it was always about the relationship aspect, and they're like only 16 years old or whatever, right? And
yeah.
Like, here it is. They're just talking about, like, you know, just friendship issues, and the show is just funny in general. Like, Ben Savage always does a great job, and Danielle Fischel, like everybody on that show has just been so good, and
I know what impresses me. Even the younger actors, they're really funny. Like, you've got Ava and Doi.
Doi, who lost the name, because that's all you hear instead of Dewey. They're all so quirky, and I love that so much about them. And, you know, and it'd be like the older characters, like, again, Topanga and Corey and Sean, who makes appearances here and there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're all grown up. It's like they actually grew up. Yeah, they'll have goofy moments or whatever, and, you know, Corey will be Corey from Boy Meets World. But it's like they really did all grow up, and that's refreshing instead of, like, being the same character from, like, the
yeah.
So I really appreciated that. What would be, like, your favorite episode? There's so many to choose from, I think.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite episode was when Riley and Maya took a trip out to, like, a country area where Sean was staying in a cabin. And then Sean came to realize that he had become Feeny.
Yes. Yeah.
There was a lot of fun in that episode.
Yeah, and they did a callback too with their handshake from, like, way back in the day. Yeah, and then they're all talking about, like, he's Feeny, and Riley and Maya wonder about their friendship. Like, is that going to be us when we grow up, you know? Stuff like that. And, of course, at the end of the episode, spoiler alert, like, yeah, Sean asked Maya's mother to marry him. So, overall,
it was nice romantic twist there.
Yeah, exactly. I like the time capsule one where they look for the time capsule and they end up at Feeny's house. So I definitely like that one.
Yeah. And, oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. They're talking about like the things that they put in the time capsule, and they talk about the past and, you know, Corey being surprised. Another nice callback where Corey reads Lauren's note. Lauren,
yeah.
If you guys remember, was like season
the ski lodge.
Yeah, the ski lodge, which is another callback later on down the line. But yeah, I definitely liked that episode. Favorite cameo from an old character from Boy Meets World?
Oh, wow.
There's a lot there too.
Yeah, you know what? It was really funny to see that Stuart Minkus had grown up to marry Jennifer Bassett.
That's
a random thing, and it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, that fits. That's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And we hardly saw, like, Minkus was like a season one character, and then, like, barely appeared after that. So it's kind of weird, but I think it's kind of cool to see him in the show, like almost like as a regular guest.
Yeah,
because he wasn't even in those formative years. Right, when they were all growing up and stuff like that, they were just there for the first season. I like Mr. Turner appearing out of nowhere too. Like, I know he was a regular in the middle seasons, and, you know, he was apparently the one that hired Corey.
Yeah,
which is weird too, because I didn't expect Corey to become a history teacher.
Yeah,
you know, after all the times he messed around in class, and then Mr. Turner apparently hires them, and there's this nice episode where Riley and Maya had a new English teacher, and she taught comic books, and Mr. Turner did the same thing back in Boy Meets World.
Yeah, that was such a fun callback.
Yeah, yeah. So many callbacks. Wondering right now. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, yeah, one more. It really took me by surprise was when Eric you know, met up again with that young boy that he had befriended.
Oh, during
Boy Meets World. I can't think of his name, but Tom. Okay, yeah.
And it was the same actor, too. The same kid. from way back, which is great.
I'd kind of forgotten about it, so it wasn't something I saw coming. So then when they revealed it, I was, oh my gosh, that's right.
Yeah. I love that Eric is still crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. So, what I was wondering is that, when are we going to see Corey's sister?
Yeah, Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if they had even mentioned her during that holiday episode. And honestly, I can't remember.
The funny thing here is that two actresses played Morgan. And
yeah, that's right.
I saw a picture that they shot, and it's supposed to be like the season finale, that both actresses were there. So what are they going to do with that?
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah, I see that picture. I'll show it to you later, but like...
Okay, yeah, and it, you know, it kind of doesn't surprise me that they would do something like that, because the show is really good at incorporating meta-humor.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly like, when they refer to the students who sit at the side of the class, and, you know, oh, you know, well, I'm here too, and...
Yeah, and they never talk, right? It's always the five talking, if you include they. But yeah, it's just funny how they're just like, oh, well, if the show's about us, they're not talking.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. So there's no season four it hasn't been renewed yet for a fourth season. And I'm kind of worried about that. Maybe they won't renew on Disney and they'll put on maybe Family Freeform or something like that, or whatever that channel is called now. So hopefully they don't, because it's been really good so far.
Yeah, it would be nice to see it go on.
Yeah, Boy Meets World lasted 7 seasons, and I would like to see Riley and Maya handle their lives until college, because that's what Corey, Sean Papanga did. So I would like to see that.
Yeah, because where they are now, what, they just started high school, so
I should see them graduate. Yeah, I want to see them finish that story and see where they go from there. And maybe a third generation will get something like another Boy Meets World or something like that. I have no idea. So, I guess that's it. I guess you wanted to say one more thing, right?
Thunder.
Lightning.
Ring power!
Thanks, Joanne.
This is TJP, and you're listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast.
It's Fundamental Podcast, episode 64. Guess what we're talking about today. Anyway, always joining me, the greatest storyteller of all time, Adam Jacoby. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot, man. I'm really excited to be talking about numbers to the sixth power. That's my guess as to what we're talking about today.
I'm not that intelligent, man.
Did you know that 3 to the 6th power is 729?
No, I'm not even sure that's the right answer. Is it?
It is. I wouldn't lie to you.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I believe you. By the way, joining us, one of my favorite gamers, he makes science look good, he makes gaming look good. He also does a podcast, Spawn on Me, and Operation Cube. He's all about diversity in gaming and everywhere else. Sharif Jackson, what is up?
What up, man? Like, my new name is Sharif 64. and I'm ready to go.
Yeah. So, episode 64, as you know, we talk gaming here in Rare Race Fundamental, and of course we're going to talk about the Nintendo 64, which is formerly called the Ultra 64, but they decided it's much better to call it Nintendo 64 because we're familiar that way. So, every game basically had like a 64 at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, from now on, Adam, you're Adam 64.
That's high praise.
Yes, it totally is. So, the Nintendo 64 came out, you guys ready, 20 years ago.
Damn it. Oh, boy, you're right.
September of 1996. Wow, yeah. That's a long
time. Yeah, there's so many of these game anniversaries that are passing, and every one, it just doesn't... I mean, on one hand, it does feel like it's been that long ago because I was, in high school when it came out, but on the other hand, I'm just like, man, like, time has really flown by when I think about where gaming has gone since the N64 era.
Here's something even crazier. This is a God's honest truth. The Nintendo 64 is older now than the Atari 2600 was when the Nintendo 64 came out.
Ooh.
So it was
you're right.
It was 19 years between the 2600 and the Nintendo 64, and 20 years between then and now.
Wow, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Wow, but I never thought of that. That's crazy.
Yeah,
right. Because it just feels like yesterday. I was also in high school when the Nintendo 64 came out, and at that time, I also had a PlayStation and a Saturn. What were your feelings about it? When were you guys excited when Nintendo was going to bring the system out, or were you guys just like, it's too expensive or whatever? Not that excited about it.
Well, I was super excited. I mean, I didn't yet have a concept of like money and expenses at 16 years old, so I was pretty much like, oh, cool, like, I need that new system, and if I get good grades, and like, I had a job at the time as well, so I was like, if I work, I forgot if I was working, I was either working daycare, McDonald's, or some mix of the two, mm-hmm. And like, I was like, yo, if I just work enough and just put enough money to the side, that, like, I can get one. So, yeah, I was super excited, I mean, but it was interesting, because I was excited, but I remember thinking, like, Super Nintendo could probably go for another, 5 years or something. Like, I was still really enjoying Super Nintendo games. I didn't feel like they looked dated or anything at that time. So while I was excited for it, I was still, like, if they didn't announce it, I would still be cool because Super Nintendo was still dope to me.
Mm-hmm. Adam?
Yeah, I was a Super Nintendo kid, too. But I was also a PlayStation 1 kid. And so we had just gotten a PlayStation 1 when they announced the Nintendo 64. I wasn't making enough money to be like Nintendo 64 money. I was working too. And plus, PlayStation had like the Final Fantasy stuff and the EA Sports games. And so I had really cast my lot as a gamer, as a teen gamer, in those categories at that point. Like I had already started to grow out of the Mario stuff,
mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't as hype for the 64 as I was for like the Super Nintendo. Like I think it like I thought it sounded cool. But it was going to be fine if somebody else owned it,
Right. Yeah, and the thing is, like, you mentioned the games, you mentioned the software, and I was reading in those magazines back in those Electronic Gaming Monthly days that the 64 wasn't going to have that much software because they were probably only going to release, like, what, a few games in the first few months, like mm-hmm. Mario and Wave Race and Pilot Wings, and that seems like that was, like, the first wave right there, and that was it, right? Because they didn't have many games, and what did you guys think of Nintendo sticking with the cartridge format instead of CDs, which was, the wave of the future,
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a PlayStation, so I wasn't really, you know, I didn't really do any CD-based games on the console side. Obviously, I did them on the PC side, you know, but yeah, to me, it was just normal. It was like console games came on cartridges, you know.
Right.
So like most of the stuff that I heard about that decision being controversial was really like reading about it in the gaming magazines, but in terms of my practical experience, it didn't really make a difference because I was like, I've been playing with cartridges, you know, since the 80s, so I'm good.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I blow cartridges, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dichotomy didn't seem like as big of a deal to me at the time. And like, we can look back at it now, and that was, the biggest split in the way that console video gaming was approached in probably the history of console gaming. I mean, maybe the difference is the way the two major consoles today approach, like, game sharing. But, like, that's about as big as this split was, too, you know, the cartridge versus CD thing. And it cost Nintendo Squaresoft, as I recall.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was, but, you know, I when I was growing up, it was like, Nintendo does cartridge and controller like this, and Sega does it like this. Oh, wow, aren't they so different? but this was a radical departure to have two totally different, I guess, operating systems, platforms, going on at the same time like that. Like, it was, in retrospect, it's kind of nuts that was happening at the same time.
Yeah. So let's talk about the controller. Like, it's still weird even to this day. Like, it has some, like, you know, like, I don't even know how to describe the shape, but it's almost like, you know, it's like near like a steering wheel almost, a small steering wheel, right? Mm-hmm. And it has those four little yellow buttons and the big B and A buttons. And then, of course, they're basically like the first main system to have an analog stick, which wasn't very good, by the way. It still isn't. So what do you think of that?
I mean, I tried to use one a few years ago, and in retrospect, it is really bad. Like, I don't know if my hands have just gotten much bigger, or they've gotten much more cynical and downtrodden with my age. But man, that thing—it is a very uncomfortable controller to hold for long periods of time. But I remember thinking when I was younger, I thought it was super comfortable, And I remember also liking it because my best friend was like left-handed, and you could grab it in a left-handed way. If like you grab sort of like the left two, I don't know what you call them, the bottom extensions, and then you use like the analog with your right hand and the D-pad would like become buttons, you know, for like certain games. So like I thought that was cool that it kind of, you know, that it tried to incorporate both left and like right-handed players. But the thing about the controller is that, you know, like a lot of Nintendo stuff that we've seen even from the Wii and the Wii U, if a game is designed with that in mind, it comes out incredible. But that's like a very small percentage of that total amount of games. So I thought that, you know, like, it was so clear to tell what games they designed kind of in tandem with the controller or which ones in mind and, like, which ones they just kind of tried to make work. So I thought that, like, that was one of the bad things about the controller. But one thing that I do remember when I compared with the competition, like, the PlayStation and the Saturn and, like, even if you count, like, the Jaguar and the 32X and all those things, I thought that the D-pad on the N64 was still the best one, even though most games tended to focus on the analog stick, and like that was like one of the big kind of like selling points of the controller, I still thought that that D-pad still had that same sensitivity and like a tightness of the Super Nintendo, and it made it so hard for me to play, for example, like the Street Fighter Alpha series on PlayStation, and on Saturn too, because I thought that the D-pads, they just didn't feel good for like when I'm busting out like my quarter circles and my half circles and, you know, and all that stuff for the fighting game. So yeah, I thought that the controller had its pros and cons.
The setup was more or less the exact same as the Super Nintendo. You know, you got your triggers in the same place, you got your D-pad in the same place, four buttons and a diamond on the right, and I am left-handed, and it never really occurred to me that the Nintendo 64 would have been better for me. I just figured that, you know, I was just at a disadvantage against other people because my right hand was my ham hand. And so I was just like, well, I'm in a fighting game, I'm just mashing it. I'm doomed to mash. But it was so familiar, and in retrospect, not at all revolutionary in any way on the PlayStation, but it got me. And likewise on the Nintendo 64, I mean the buttons were totally different, and like Sharif said, like if the game was designed with that in mind, awesome, but if not, it seemed like a foreign object in my hand, and especially because I didn't own one. So I was just like, well, this must be a bad system. I reject all of this. so I eventually I grew into it. It started to make a little bit more sense to my ham hands, but there is definitely an adjustment process to it for sure.
Yeah, it's great for 3D games like Mario and Conker and Banjo-Kazooie and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But
oh yeah,
try playing like when they tell you in Mario Party to rotate the analog stick. It's so painful.
God.
It's awful.
You're like, why am I? I should be able to do this.
And it hurts. It hurts when you do it because I don't know, like just like the analog stick is, I don't know, like, it's thin, you know, and it's also thin in the stick itself is thin, and the circling thing is thin as well, so it's like, it hurts when you try to use it, like, when you're circling it or whatever, you know, when you do rotation and stuff like that,
yep.
And it's not great when you try to play fighting games on it as well, so, yeah, like Sherry said, like, the pad is still outstanding, although it's a bit a bit apart from the buttons for my taste, but you know, it's still really good. So let's talk about the games, which they didn't have very much, honestly. Like, I looked it up, it's like not even 400 games total in its lifetime, considering like how all the other systems now have like thousands and thousands of games.
Yeah.
So what were some of the games that you played a lot for the 64?
Well, you know, I won't be surprised if all of our lists are sort of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, there were, you know, obviously I haven't played all 400, but I think, I feel like the thing about the N64 is that they had that core group of games that everybody kind of deemed as the games to play on the system, and that's what people bought. So, I mean, the games that I really played a lot of, like when I think of probably the most, was probably Mario Kart 64, because, you know, I have a brother that's about 2 years older than me, and with the Super Nintendo, we just played Battle Mode all the time, and it was pretty much the same thing with this one, where, like, we would literally be up until ungodly amounts of time at night.
Right.
Like, the record will be in the hundreds. In terms of the wins and losses, so yeah, that's just always been my game. I love the battle mode there, and yeah, it was just such a step up from like Super Nintendo with that kind of like the voices and like that like really crazy like Toad's Turnpike level with the cars.
You know,
and yeah, it was. I feel like that was one of those games where like the difference between like the 3D of N64 and sort of like the flat Mode 7 kind of racing of the Super Nintendo. I think that that's one of the games that made like probably the starkest difference to show that this was like a more powerful console. So a lot of Mario Kart. Surprisingly, while I recognize that Mario 64 is a great game, I didn't play that much of it. I actually didn't even own it. You know, because like it didn't come with the system. I think it was the first Nintendo system to come without. So I borrowed it from a friend, and like it was like definitely fun, but I was still all about the side-scrolling Mario. So I was like, this is okay, but. You know, I'll just play Mario 3 or Super Mario World if I want that kind of experience. And then my brother and I also played a lot of multiplayer GoldenEye. And like that was a game that I would bring to my friend's house, and we would do the 4-player where you can see each other's screen. And just like go in these levels like stack, and I think there was like basement or something like that, temple. It was just a really really fun game where like it wasn't just about just seeing somebody and shooting, because like, you could like set traps and you know, and there was like heat seeking stuff and trip mines and all kind of things like that. Those are the games that probably come to mind the most for me. I would also say, just like really quickly, Star Fox 64 as well.
Love that.
Even though that was, you know, I mostly played it just in the single player. It was just a cool, like, hey, I want to play something cool for 40 minutes, you know? I, for some reason, really love the voices of the Star Fox characters.
They're just speaking English now.
Yeah. It's so zany. Like, it's like watching, like, a really zany cartoon. And, like, you know, even though the game doesn't really change, I would just play it over and over and over. And I still play it now. I mean, like, I have it for the 3DS. Yeah. I mean, it's just a really fun game, and it's a genre that you really don't see a lot anymore. Just like arcade shooter, you know.
Yeah.
Those are the games that I think as the system was out that I sort of played the most of.
What's up, y'all? This is Sharif, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Somewhat Fundamental podcast.
Yeah, I didn't play a whole lot of Mario 64 either for whatever reason, and it's not like I didn't have fun when I did play it, but yeah, it didn't have that super catchy appeal that, you know, your Super Mario World, your Mario Brothers platforms did. As you mentioned, Mario Kart 64, you're right, that was about as stark a contrast in terms of console power that you could see demonstrated. The one bummer about it, and the only reason that I still hung on to Mario Kart instead of Mario Kart 64, was you couldn't turn off the computer assist. So, and one of my favorite things about Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo was putting up the fastest possible times. And, like, if that meant that I was just laying waste to somebody by a half a lap, well, then I was going to just crush them. That's the way it worked. Like, that wasn't a problem during the battle mode, which is why battle mode quickly became my favorite on 64. But, you know, it was like, oh, I'm leading with one lap to go. There's no way I win this race. Like, that, and that just, like, totally ruined it for me. But, you know, I mean, if I was in fifth place with one lap to go, I'm like, oh, it's on. I got this. GoldenEye was one of the games that I found myself playing often because it was the game that everybody I knew had. And it quickly became apparent to me that this was a brand new genre, almost a new generation of gaming that I was not going to be a part of because I universally at GoldenEye. And maybe it's because, you know, I was the only left-handed person playing. Maybe it was because I didn't have it, you know, at home, and so I didn't know what the maps were like. I was never familiar with the maps. And so, like, someone could look at my part of the screen and be like, oh, Adam's there. I'll go get him. Yep. And I'd just be like, la, 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 la. Oh, it looks like he's in a hallway. Wonder where that hallway is. Okay, I'm just going to keep wandering around until somebody shoots me. And so that was a problem. And it's something that has stuck around with every shooter that happens on the map afterwards. Like, it pretty well predicated the terrible skills I have at Halo. like, it's something that I came by honestly. I've never been good at shooters. 06 or 07, who had an N64, and his favorite game, and rightfully so, was Ocarina of Time. Like, that was an awesome game. And so, like, I would watch him play it. I never played it when the N64 was out, like, for the first time, when it was the console. But I knew it was cool. I knew it had good ratings. And once again, the jump from the Super Nintendo, was it Legend of Time or...
A Link to the Past.
Link to the Past, yeah, that's it. The difference between that and Ocarina of Time, just in terms of graphic capabilities, is immense. And it's really cool to see, and it's one of the cool examples of a console game and of a franchise still incorporating tough puzzles. You know, the best part of when it was an 8-bit game and a 16-bit game, like, it didn't sacrifice those in order to just wow you visually instead. Like, it was still visually really good, but the it didn't make you think any less. And right, that's something that not every game really ever figured out. And I'm looking right at you, Mario Paper. oh, God, that game. Anyway, like... I think Ocarina of Time is one of the biggest triumphs of the entire console for that reason, because it was just about the perfect N64 game.
Yeah, and if you ask, like, you know, all those magazines or those, you know, expert gamers or whatever, it's like they usually have Ocarina of Time at the top of their list for the greatest game of all time. Like, it's that transcendent, basically. And really, like, the 64 had, like, a lot of games that were revolutionary, like Mario 64, GoldenEye, you mentioned Ocarina of Time, and they also had Conker with the explicit language and everything in their dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Fox is still a great game to this day. They had so many games, but they're mostly in-house. They really didn't have many third-party games, because that all went to, you know, the PlayStation, Final Fantasy, and the EA Sports and everything. So I think that's where they suffered.
Yeah, see, I kind of... I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I think that the games that we mention are so good that it kind of obscures the fact that there were plenty of good third-party games. They just weren't, like, transcendent. Like, the games that we just talked about, as you said, usually rank in the top maybe 20 or so for a good number of people, like, of all time in general. You know, so, like, that's going to obscure, I think that the N64 had decent third-party support. I definitely think that, like, PlayStation, by taking Square, that was a huge hit. And, like, I also think that a lot of the, even though the Nintendo 64 still had sports games, like, you could tell the focus really went more to the Sega and Sony platforms. And then when 2K came out on the Dreamcast, then it was all over. I actually really enjoyed, this is kind of a random game, but, there was a game, I gotta look up who made it. I think it might have been Konami, but, there was a game, Kobe Bryant's NBA Courtside. For the N64. So, like, this is I just got to the league and I'm shooting air balls, Kobe, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, an afro still, yeah.
Yeah, but the game was actually pretty fun, and the graphics were great, and you could pretty much dunk from, like, almost from NBA Jam range, even though it was supposedly, simulation game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they had, like, the NBA license and the players license, so they had all the players in it. I really enjoyed that game. Yes, so, like, it was by Left Field Productions. I feel like there were, like, also some really good, like, wrestling games for, like, N64 as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
I feel like they had third-party support, but when you have games like Ocarina of Time and, you know, GoldenEye and these games, it just never gets talked about.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, like, they did only have less than 400 games throughout its system life. So, there was also, like, games like Blast Corps, right?
Right.
Where everything explode. They have Snowboard Kids. Not sure if you've heard of that, but it's basically like a snowboard racing game. They also have, 1080 is an in-house, snowboard game as well.
I remember. I mean, you mentioned, that Banjo-Kazooie, which was not, like, well, I guess Rare made it in Nintendo.
Rare's pretty much in-house.
I don't know if Rogue Squadron was, I feel like that was third party, I'm not sure.
The Star Wars game?
Yeah.
I think they're third party, yeah. Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Turok, which I really enjoyed, was, like, a claim.
That's right.
Game.
That's right. Yeah.
Those wrestling games. I just remember playing, like, No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000, and I mean, this was during, like, the Attitude Era, you know, of WWF. So the games were, like, just as wild, which was always interesting to see on a Nintendo platform, like, this time where, like, wrestling was, like, probably at its most
popular,
like, violent and cursing and all the cool stuff going on.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, I do want to hit this guy with a chain wrapped around my fist. That sounds like a great idea. Let's go, WWE. Let's go, N64.
Yeah, exactly. And it's four players, too, so it's like, you know, you can just have fun for, like, hours on end.
Totally.
With those games, yeah. Let's not forget, Smash Bros. Also was introduced in that system.
That was a big deal. And speaking of four-player games, not only Smash Bros., but that was the first time that we heard from Mario Party, right?
Yeah.
We played a lot of Mario Party in college.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, and you probably lost some friends along the way of that game, right? maybe I did, but I'm not.
after the juice, the apple juice in the Bud Light cans that we were drinking, after about six of those, it was a little hard to take it too seriously. But yeah. that was again a totally revolutionary game in the way that that people approached, you know, just what you can do with console games.
Yeah. And Mario Party is still going strong right now.
Exactly.
I think they're on their 10th one right now.
Yep. I think it's 17. Like Mario Party 17.
Yes.
I believe it. Yeah.
It's been going on forever, and like now they have separate. They like had one for the Wii U and a separate one for the 3DS, and I'm pretty sure they'll have one for the Switch. So, yeah, it definitely still sells. People love it, even though it, as you said, Ray, it drives people away. It drives friends away.
Yeah. They're also, like I also mentioned, they're also pretty heavy on the 3D platforming, like Banjo-Kazooie, its sequel, and Conker's Bad Fur Day, which, again, one of the final games for us before. But, you know, they got away with all the cursing and all the, you know, the adult things that they had in that game. You ever play that one, Conker? They remade it for Xbox 360, I believe, as well.
I never played it.
Mm-hmm. I never even heard of it, or at least while we were talking about it. But then I've been Wikipediaing on the side. Conker's Bad Fur Day?
Yes.
And I remember... How big of a deal that was, not only because it was, you know, like, oh, it's we're getting into some adult, you know, some risque humor here, but it was actually like a pretty cool looking game, and it's almost a shame that you could hear him say, you know, like PG-13 language, and that was the big hook on it, when it really would have stood on its own without that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe another game that where you can fight poo with toilet paper. Like,
right.
Yeah, like one of the bosses is poo with corn teeth, and you use toilet paper to beat him. That's
like all that needs to be said.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And Mario did have his own sports. They had Mario Tennis, they had Mario Golf. Those weren't bad. And I think they still do them to this day as well, so... Those weren't bad games as well.
Yeah, they needed to rescue the concept of Mario playing tennis from the Virtua Boy days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I never played a Virtua Boy.
I did once.
I remember going to a Toys R Us when, like, they were, you know, like I was in the New York area, so all the debuts would be there. So, like, they were, like, basically had this special event at a Toys R Us where they were giving you, like, an early exclusive look at the Virtua Boy. And I put my head in that thing, and I got out, and I was like, well, because that's the first Nintendo product I'm not buying.
Yeah. Because
I was literally, like, dizzy. Like, my forehead was, like, sweaty. Like, the actual game was not that bad, but it was just, you just felt bad after playing it. Like, you felt, like, physically ill.
All you see is red, right? Like, that's all you basically see?
Yep. It's like the green of the Game Boy, except red.
And it was the only way they could do that, or they could have like an acceptable amount of resolution. Like if they tried to incorporate all the colors, it would have been just a terrible picture. Mm-hmm. But they're we did the science, and if it's red, then you can pick out the contrast even more, but we can't do the color. You know, like, if you can't do it in color, maybe don't do it. Like, let's just let the technology bloom a bit before we come out with this console. Maybe.
I mean, I collect games, but I was recently at a dealer show, and they were selling the Virtua Boy for $200, and I'm like,
what?
No. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
No, never. I buy it for $5, maybe. Like, what am I gonna do with it anyway? Honestly, there seems like to be like a lot of gadgets too. It just seems a little, you know, a waste of space, basically.
Yeah, I mean, if like you're a collector and you just want it to display and say you have it, sure. As long as you understand that there's no functionality to be gained out of that thing, that will not like just leave you just, you know, in a daze.
Right. Yeah. So all in all, like, did the 64 disappoint you, or it could have been much better? What do you guys think?
No, it didn't disappoint me at all, man. Like, you know, like, it pretty much defined gaming for me, you know, from 96 till I went to college in about 98. One of the funny things is, one of the reasons I didn't really play Ocarina of Time when the N64 first came out, even though I was a huge, like, Zelda fan, was because I went to college, and I got introduced to, like, computer gaming, because I never had a computer until I went to college. And from then on, it was just nothing but, like, death matches of Quake 2, and then and then Unreal and Unreal Tournament, and I didn't own a console for, like, 10 years, because I was just playing PC games.
Understandable.
You know? So, I mean, it was pretty much my life for 2 years. I think that the games that we mentioned, you know, I think that's enough to cement it as a great console, specifically for me, though. But I can say that, you know, it really, as most Nintendo products are, if you don't like the main franchises, you're probably not going to enjoy the system. Was there a Metroid game on N64?
No, there was no Metroid game. I can't remember. Yes.
They did have a Killer Instinct on it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I forgot. They had one game I really liked a lot, too, was they had Mortal Kombat Trilogy.
Yeah.
Which was, like, all three Mortal Kombat games. And the thing that I remember was that they had this, like, kind of tournament mode where you could pick 8 players, and you just keep on playing until one person, like, defeats, like, your player, and that player explodes, and the next one, like, drops in. My brother and I would just play that a lot. It would be a lot of just, like, 8, just, like, long matches where you basically have to kill someone 8 times to win. It didn't disappoint me at all. You know, I think even going back to the games now, because, like, I like have a few on the virtual console on my Wii U and on my 3DS, and I went back and played Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, which I never played. Mm-hmm. I played those in like the past 2 years. Phenomenal games that still stand up, like, you know, almost 20 years later, and you can. Like, I almost wished I played them then, because I would have been able to appreciate them even more, because when I played them now, I saw games that benefited from those games already being out and kind of setting the standard. Man, those games are incredible. I think it's a great console to me. I give it a thumbs up.
I agree. It was, you know, like I said, it wasn't what I was playing with at the time, unless I was at somebody else's house, and I knew a lot of people who had it too, and that was going into college and thereafter too, and that was well after GameCube had come out, but N64, for its relatively small window and for its small library, had a really, really important place in the landscape of gaming, and it was, I would argue, even more than PlayStation, which I loved unconditionally. But I think that library of Nintendo games, especially the ones that we mentioned here, really helped push forward great 3D gaming and the next generation of game making. In a way that you can't say, well, I was a little disappointed. Like, if more third-party developers had been on that, you know, fine, maybe, cool. But then, at that point, what we're probably seeing is a situation that was more like Nintendo and Genesis, where, or Super Nintendo and Genesis, where it's, you know, two consoles releasing the same games, and then they're just sort of a little different in their own way based on how the console computer itself is engineered. But, you know, you're still getting the same experience more or less either way. And that's not what we had. And what we had was, you know, if you have a
an N64, you know, here are the games that you're going to see. If you have a PlayStation, you know, you're going to be exposed to a totally different gaming environment. Not only experience with the controller and the disc, but like, you know, you got Final Fantasy, you got EA, you got you name it. And that was cool. That was, I think, something that the gaming world was to see two different environments bloom, you know, germinate in their own, like, organic but totally separate environments. So, yeah, I don't think that you can say anything about the N64 was particularly disappointing. If there was anything disappointing, it's that it didn't get as much time before the GameCube came out. That, you know, the Super Nintendo was allowed to reign for, what, like, 6 years. And then the GameCube came out, like, what, 3 years after the N64? So, like, there's that. That's about it. That's about, there are just too many good things that came out of the N64, I think. And,
yeah.
And really, social, you know, what counted for social 20 to 15 years ago, like, four-player gaming, that was all of a sudden a new thing, and you weren't going to get that on PlayStation. But, you know,
right,
playing with a bunch of friends, having not just, like, it's me against you, and, like, okay, us two are just going to sit in our basement for the next 2 hours. Like, having a ton of people over, that was accommodated in a way that had never been accommodated before in gaming. That by itself just
right,
totally changed the entire landscape. That was really cool, and I don't think you can ever take that away from it.
Hey guys, it's Pamela Horton, Miss October 2012, and you're listening to Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast. See you then.
Definitely first party heavy, and you know, quality, the quality is really good, like Mario Kart, Star Fox. You can play Star Fox with four players as well. And F-Zero, we didn't even mention F-Zero, right?
Yeah.
F-Zero X.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also four player. The wrestling games. Perfect Dark, which is like almost like the spiritual successor to GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Yeah, so lots of games from Nintendo and Rare, which is their in-house developers, so
yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, and Adam's right, like, you know, like, we remember more from the 64 than the PlayStation 1, which, yeah, sure, they had the Tekken series and Final Fantasy 7.
Tomb Raider.
But, yeah, Tomb Raider, Crash Bandicoot, but we remember more from the 64 software than we do the PlayStation, even though the PlayStation probably had, like, three times more games. Right?
Yeah, I think that's one reason why the GameCube came so quickly is because Nintendo started to realize, kind of expensive to make these cartridges, man.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, like, you don't have to worry about the loading time and all that stuff, it's just cheap as hell to use these cheap-ass discs, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I think, like, that's why they, like, kind of rushed the GameCube out to make sure that they, you know, still had money. You know.
Right. So. Yeah. And the GameCube, that's another story, but GameCube also had a great library as well, like top heavy games and stuff like that. So
Fundamental power ranking.
Sharif, I asked you to do a quick top 5 games of all time for you, I guess, for 64. Can you do that?
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
So, top 5. So my number 5. Now this is going to include games that I've played even recently.
Yeah.
Right?
That's fine. All right. That's fine.
So my number 5 is Mario 64, because after playing it through, it pretty much inspires like every 3D game with a camera. Like that's including like Grand Theft Auto. That's including, like, you know,
Watch Dogs 2, which I'm playing now. Like, every game that wouldn't be the closest content-wise to a Mario game came from Mario 64. So I gotta kinda give it that respect. And there's some games that still don't get the camera right, even though Mario 64 got it in 96. Mm-hmm. My number four would be Ocarina of Time. I really, really like the game. I must say, though, I do like the Wind Waker on the GameCube better. But Ocarina was the first time seeing Zelda in 3D. The one thing that I don't think is appreciated as much is the music. Like, the fact that they really used, like, the music from the different songs that you learned and, like, how those songs associated with the forest and the Gorons and that kind of stuff was really, really dope. And I actually went to a live symphony of Zelda music, and it was really dope to hear the Ocarina stuff. Where my list go? Okay. Number four is Mario Kart 64, as I said before. Battle mode was amazing. My number three, yeah. Battle mode was incredible. Also, like, the levels had so many jumps and pits, and it just, because it was actually in 3D, it felt like that sense of depth and height that you didn't have in the original Super Mario Kart was, like, amazing. Plus, I just loved hearing Wario go, "Mamma Mia!" which was always great. Number two is Star Fox. As I said before, I still play the game. I think it's the perfect example of just short and sweet, you know. Doesn't really try to give you a complicated story. It's just like, shoot the bad guys and get power-ups. And also kind of a scary game. I remember having some nightmares about Andross, the last boss, who's just this big face that's basically taunting you about your dead father. And I was like, holy crap. And number one for me is GoldenEye. I think GoldenEye kind of is even beyond the Nintendo 64. It kind of exemplifies first-person shooters on a console. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, even though obviously Doom and Quake had been out for years on the PC, it was the first time I remember actually seeing a first-person shooter, a multiplayer first-person shooter on a console really work. So it's really kind of a seminal game, like, just video gaming in general. And that led to, you know, like, the Halos and, like, you know, and Call of Duties and, like, all that stuff. It really all started with GoldenEye, you know? So, yeah, that's my list.
I'm in the same vein as Adam. Like, I suck at GoldenEye. Like, I didn't own the game until late, and, you know, like, I would always end up with only, like, one or two kills, and it's usually up to five in multiplayer, so... Yeah, but hey, I acknowledge how fun it was, and, you know, as Sherry said, it's a very revolutionary game for what it was. Like, you know, it made first-person shooters popular to this day. So, you know, the 64, one of the, I don't know, there's so many consoles out there that you could say were great, but, you know, every time Nintendo put out a console, we're always gonna be talking about it. We're always gonna talk about their classic games. Like, again, Mario 64, still revolutionary.
Right.
Ocarina of Time. Even the sequels like Mario Kart 64 and F-Zero X. And oh my god, I didn't talk about Wave Race 64.
Yeah,
which is another great game.
Wave Race is a great game, man.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, and we were so amazed by the water effects.
I mean, they still look good. It definitely doesn't look as good as a modern game, but it still looks good, especially when you see how jaggy the rest of the game looks. Like, the water looks incredible.
Like, they clearly spent way too much time on the water.
Yeah. And not enough on, like, everything else, basically. So, yeah, well... Yeah, I mean, if someone says that Nintendo 64 is like a top 5 console of all time, I wouldn't blame them, because again, the library was so good, no matter, even though it was so small. So, yeah, I think that's it. Did we miss anything else on the 64? Nothing?
We missed Donkey Kong 64.
It's another 3D game.
Sorry, had the Donkey Kong rap at the beginning, which I don't, but it was pretty, freaked me out when I first saw it. I was like, what the hell is going on?
does anybody know the lyrics of the Donkey Kong rap? Because I certainly don't.
I believe I do, and I think they go like this.
there's no need to be bugging when it's a Donkey Kong you're hugging.
Oh my god. The show's not even over yet, Adam. Sharif, before I kick Adam out, go ahead and...
Hey, just make sure that when you edit this, like, you auto-tune Adam's voice when he's in the earth. so that the kids nowadays can actually understand it. That's the only way they understand rap now, is if it sounds like Future or somebody. So, yeah, auto-tune.
Go ahead and publicize your social media and your YouTube channels and everything else, your podcasts, whatever.
Sure. So if you go to sharifjackson.com, sharefjackson.com, that will have a link to Gaming Looks Good, which is my gaming YouTube series, Science Looks Good, my science blog, Spawn On Me and Operation Cubicle, which are my two podcasts, which you can also find on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Google Play, and Spawn On Me is also on NPR1, earbud.fm. And I'm also in the midst of launching a specific math section because I am I do a lot of math tutoring, so I'm starting up a Math Looks Good section of my website where I'll be posting different kind of ways to like solve math problems. So if you're a parent or if you're going through some math stuff in work or degree or like whatever, and you want to know how to solve a quadratic equation, you know, I'm here for you. So it's all at sharifjackson.com, and also you can follow me at Sharif Jackson on Twitter.
Is Adam still there? Let me leave. He left. Wow.
Adam has evaporated into the ether.
He did. Anyway, follow him at Adam_Jacoby. The underscore is important. And check him out at Go. Okay, hold on. I think it's calling again. We just dropped them. Oh, where the heck is it? That's weird.
I feel like that's what happens when you say Donkey Kong lyrics. Like, you just get teleported. Get teleported away.
Adam, we still need you to do your social media and stuff like that.
As always, you can find me at FLOTUS. I am tweeting as the first lady of the United States.
Now,
I think I've gotten Michelle's voice down pat, finally.
I'm just saying, I mean, are you the current FLOTUS or are you the upcoming FLOTUS? That's
I think the upcoming FLOTUS is going to be even easier to tweet at. Or at. And you can also find me at Adam_Jacoby_, as always, vitally important. And my continuing condolences to the person who has it without the underscore, that poor, poor man who does not deserve the attention that he gets. that poor guy. Anyway, he still has me blocked. Anyway, there's that. And there is at Iowa Awesome, which is for our website, Go Iowa Awesome, all the Iowa Hawkeyes news, mirth, giggles that you could possibly want, and even more that you don't want, but we're going to give it to you anyway because somebody else wants. So that's my jam that I've got going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and close off the show, Adam, for reals.
Well, there's no need to be bugging, gentlemen, when it's a Ninja Turtle you're hugging.
There you go. That's what I was talking about. Thanks for wasting my time, guys. Game over, yeah!
Hashtag blame Ray Ray.
Moded.